So the other night I was revisiting the Stanley Kubrick film, Eyes Wide Shut. Maybe you've seen it. It's got Tom Cruise wandering through this enormous Victorian Gothic mansion in a costume and a mask, and he's trying to fit in and observe the rooms full of other mask-wearing people who, most of which whom are half naked, who also happen to own the planet. And they're engaging in some very expensive, let's say, very rhythmic breathing exercises. Now, it's easy to dismiss this as Kubrick being Kubrick, but I think he was really trying to reveal something to us with this film. So we tend to think of secret societies as these dark cinematic fever dreams, you know, velvet ropes, incense, passwords whispered in Latin or whatever. But we don't feel particularly threatened. Because if the people running the world were really that theatrical, we'd surely see them coming, right? We'd, spot the cape in the elevator or wherever, and we'd be a little intrigued and probably somewhat amused. But the thing is, the masks aren't only made from Venetian porcelain, they're also made out of high-frequency trading algorithms and non-disclosure agreements. And they're made from so-called philanthropic foundations with names that are so bland, they sound like they were generated by a committee that's never actually experienced an empathetic human emotion before. And we seem to have this societal obsession with this whole secret club angle because it gives us a target. We can sort of categorize a shadowy room where a dozen guys in hoods decide which puppet goes where on the world stage. And we sort of fictionalize this perspective because it seems a little too bizarre to be taken seriously. But the reality is much more mundane. But it's also a lot more terrifying because the secret isn't that they're hiding. The secret is that they're doing it in plain sight. And we're too busy arguing over culture war outrage of the week to notice that our pockets are being picked by a psychotic cloud lord who lives in a tax haven that doesn't technically exist on a map. So we have this, we usually call these people the 1%, though they're more accurately the 0.1 or 0.01%. And this is a clean clinical term, it's a math term. But it doesn't quite capture the parasitic nature of the relationship. A parasite doesn't really hate the host. It just views the host as a juice box. And right now, we are being squeezed for every drop of attention and labor that we have left, while being told that if we just hustled a little harder, it could be us holding the straw. I'm convinced that there's a specific kind of rot that happens to the brain when it's wrapped in one too many layers of zeros. It's a psychological drift. So there was a study done some time ago at UC Berkeley, known as the Rigged Monopoly Experiment. Now, they took two people, and they gave one of them twice as much money and two dice instead of one, effectively giving that player a ridiculous advantage. Now, you'd probably assume that the rich player would feel a bit self-conscious, maybe even a little guilty about the blatant unfairness. But exactly the opposite happened. Because within a matter of minutes, the rich player started acting like an entitled prick. Smacking their pieces down harder, eating more of the shared snacks, taking down the poor, or talking down to the poor player, etc., etc. You know, typical elitist behavior. And when this shit show of a game finally ended, the winner didn't credit their win to the rigged board. They just talked about their strategy, their superior skill in winning the game. But we are now long past the point of observing social experiments in a lab. We are currently living through a period of unmasking that's making Kubrick's fiction look like a Sunday school picnic. And presently, we are seeing the psychological reality of this unhinged elite class through the horrific files that are being posted on the website of the U.S. Department of Justice. Now, when you look at those files and the audio transcripts, the video clips that are currently surfacing, you actually start to realize that the rampant underage human trafficking isn't even the worst of it. But I'm not going to go into those gruesome details here. There's plenty of other people doing that already. So as I was looking through some of those files, I realized that we're not just looking at crimes here. We're looking at a specific kind of pathology in relation to people with obscene wealth and power. And obviously some of this involves the dark triad of personality traits, narcissism, Machiavellianism, and psychopathy, all of which are running at scale. And it made me think that at a certain level of power, other human beings cease to be seen as people and become like utility units or something, or worse. They become like disposable toys for depraved whims. It's a form of moral immunity. These people spend so much of their lives living above the law that they've come to believe that they're above the human condition itself. And, you know, I think one of the most disturbing parts about this isn't necessarily the evil itself. It's the fact that it's all documented and it's in plain sight, as if they're just boldly asserting their impunity. I mean, the records are right there in black and white, and they reveal a level of systemic depravity that suggests autocracy isn't just an economic category. for some at the very top, it's a diagnosis. Now, the thing is, we've been conditioned to think of the elite as some kind of cohesive James Bond villain entity or something. But I think that's actually too generous, because it's less of a conspiracy and it's more of a shared biological imperative. So G. William Domhoff spent many years peeling back the wallpaper of high society, and what he found wasn't a secret government. It was something like a very long, very expensive lunch. And what he meant is that it's a network of policy planning groups, think tanks, expensive clubs where the governing class essentially agrees on what reality is going to look like for the rest of us over a glass of extremely expensive vintage Bordeaux. They're not necessarily hiding the truth from us. It's just that the truth is locked behind a $50,000 plate fundraiser. And that brings us to the rather weird techno-feudalist turn we've taken fairly recently. So, we aren't really consumers anymore. That's an outdated term from the 20th century. Consumers have choice. We are more like digital sharecroppers. Now, when you really think about it, we live our lives on these digital estates and owned by five or six cloud lords. And every time you scroll, every time you vent your frustrations into the void of a social media platform, you're performing free micro labor. You know, what you're doing is you're refining their algorithms as they harvest your data. And you are the raw material. Now, this is a closed loop system where they extract rent from your attention. You know what I'm talking about here. It's the attention economy. And ultimately, it's a parasitic circuit where our collective human experience is being harvested to train the very systems that will eventually make us obsolete. Now, this is like being asked to help build the cage that you're currently standing in and then being congratulated on your engagement levels. And this system survives on a very particular kind of atmospheric pressure, the manufactured distraction. And you've definitely felt this in some way or another. You know, it's that sudden frantic spike in the collective blood pressure over something such as cancel culture. So 1 week we're losing our minds over the specific wording of a commercial, and the next week we're ready to go to war over, I don't know, generational stereotyping, for example. And it's not that these things don't matter at all on a human level. They do. And they especially matter when there are human rights violations happening. Now, the problem is, you know, these oligarchs are manipulating these issues, distorting them, and they're using them as tools of war to pit us against each other. And they do this by amplifying with surgical precision at the exact moments when we might otherwise notice the massive sucking sound of wealth and power being vacuumed upward. So this is the ultimate sleight of hand. If you can keep the bottom 99% fighting a horizontal war over cultural validation. They're never going to turn their eyes upward for a vertical one. And they use our empathy, our tribalism, our deepest insecurities as a smokescreen. Now, if you've ever seen the show Mr. Robot, which I definitely recommend, they call the ruling class the Deus Group, which is the handful of people who own the concept of reality. And when you control the flow of information and the tools of surveillance, you don't even need to win arguments anymore. All you need to do is make the truth irrelevant. So you brainwash people into denying facts, and you create a fog of misinformation that's so thick, people just eventually give up trying to see through it. And this becomes a state of learned helplessness. Oppression isn't always just a boot. It's not always about a boot on your neck. It also comes in the form of being sedated by a thousand tiny digital needles while the actual infrastructure of our world, the environment, the social safety net, etc., gets stripped for parts in the background. And we are constantly being told that the other side is the enemy, while the people who are selling us the weapons for that fight are the ones that are currently foreclosing on our future. Okay, so let's talk about the silent sacrifice. Now, this isn't just about empty bank accounts or the fact that you're never going to own a house with a yard. This is about the actual physical world being treated like an all-you-can-eat buffet for a group of people who are already full. Now, there's this term, the wealth defense industry, that it sounds like something out of a Philip K. Dick novel. But it's actually a massive, it's this massive invisible army of lawyers and accountants whose entire job just consists of ensuring that the laws of physics and economics don't apply to autocrats. So, they build these elaborate legal labyrinthine structures, trusts within trusts, offshore shells within shells, to make sure that wealth stays stationary while the rest of the world remains in a state of precarious motion. But money itself isn't enough to keep a club like that together. If you're that powerful, it's not enough to trust loyalty. You have to trust collateral. So this is the dark heart of the secret society motif that we see in things like Eyes Wide Shut or in the leaked files of a certain high-profile island that we're all hearing about as of late. This is the compromat. And, you know, mutual blackmail is the ultimate social glue for the elite. Because if everyone in the room has a video of everyone else doing something depraved, nobody can ever really leave that room. And it creates this perverse kind of stability, like a community of the damned where your soul is the price of admission and the reward is total immunity from the consequences of your actions. And while they're busy securing their immunity, the host, the planet, the society, the air we're breathing, is being gutted for the short-term yield. You know, we're told that environmental collapse is a collective problem. Like we're all equally responsible because we forgot to recycle a yogurt cup or something. And meanwhile, a single private jet from a billionaire to attend a climate summit produces more carbon than you will in a decade. So it's like a race to the bottom of the resource pile. The elite, they're not trying to repair the world in any way. All they're doing is trying to build a bolt hole to survive its ending. They're buying up land in remote parts of the world, building these luxury bunkers with 10-year air filtration systems, and probably realizing that they'll have to rely on robots for security because money will essentially become worthless. And they're likely realizing that the parasite is killing the host. But, of course, instead of stopping, they're just looking for a new host because, well, that's what parasites do. This is the techno-feudal reality. And, of course, we are the serfs providing the data and the labor to fund the fancy lifeboats for the people who are sinking the ship. And the most brilliant part of all this is that they're convinced that we are the ones who should be feeling guilty. Total narcissistic gaslighting. Typical sociopathic behavior. So they're offloading the moral and environmental debt of their lifestyle onto our shoulders. While they use hyper-surveillance and AI to predict every move we make. This goes beyond class war. This is a war on the very idea of a shared future. So, where exactly does all of this leave us? This is usually the part where someone in a suit tells you to get out and vote or sign a petition that'll just be ignored by a staffer who hasn't slept in 3 days. But, you know, if we're being honest with ourselves, if the system is designed to be a vacuum for wealth and attention, I think asking it to stop sucking is like asking a shark to consider being a vegan. Yeah. It's just not in its DNA. And I think the most uncomfortable truth here, it isn't that they're powerful, it's that they're powered by us. At least for now, until they can get AI up to a scale that more or less eliminates any need for us altogether. Unfortunately, in the meantime, our collective ignorance is the fuel here. Our predictable outrage is the lubricant. And every time that we take the bait on a manufactured culture war, we are essentially handing them a fresh battery. So I guess the question is, well, how do you stop a parasite? And I think the best answer is you make the host inhospitable. So first, we have to stop waiting for some savior, whether it's a billionaire with a so-called vision or some greasy politician with a catchy slogan. Look, nobody is coming to dismantle the penthouse from the inside. So the first solution, if you want to call it that, is a radical, almost aggressive form of intellectual self-defense. And what this means is we need to develop a filter that's so fine that the propaganda of the Deus group gets caught in the mesh. So this is a process of looking at a viral headline and asking, well, who does this want me to hate? And how does that hate keep me from looking at their tax returns? We have to make a habit of this in order to deprogram our mindset. Another thing we should do is starve these cloud lords of their most precious commodity, which is, of course, our attention. Now, we talk about techno-feudalism like it's an inevitability, but a chateau without serfs is just a huge vacant house. It's kind of pointless, right? I think we're going to have to move toward decentralized systems, whether it's where you get your news, or how you store your data, or how you utilize your money, how you interact with your neighbors, and so on. So this is the quiet, slow motion type of revolution that's about building parallel structures instead of fighting against omnipotent power structures. If the current system is a predatory monopoly, it has a predatory monopoly on reality, then probably the best move here is to start living in a different one. And this involves supporting the few voices that aren't on the payroll. Support investigative journalism that actually follows the money instead of the tweets. And no, it's not flashy. And it's not going to give you that quick hit of dopamine that, like, that burn on social media provides. But it's the only thing that actually pierces through the fog. And besides, we need to eliminate or at least mitigate our dopamine addiction, because this is certainly part of the problem. I think we have to reclaim the local. And the ruling class, it has control because they operate globally while we react locally. And I think we need to flip that. We need to focus on the soil that we're actually standing on and build local resilience, like community crops and local tool libraries and face-to-face networks and so forth. You know, things that don't require an algorithm to function. And the more that you can provide yourself and your community outside of their estates, the less leverage they have over your survival. Because, look, the difficult reality here is that we aren't going to cure the human condition. The dark triad, all that narcissism and psychopathy that we see in the files, unfortunately, it's not a glitch. It's a recurring feature of our species. There's always going to be predatory people who view empathy as a weakness. But these pathological elitist tragedies, they only happen when we build these massive centralized systems that act like a greenhouse for them. So if we can try to just focus on building smaller and more equitable and more transparent circles, I think we can at least reduce the surface area for that kind of exploitation. We can definitely reduce the possibility of these psychopaths running the show. You don't try to fix a parasite. You just stop being a host. Now, this is about realizing that while they're busy building bunkers in New Zealand or wherever, we are still here. And it's up to us to build alternative and sustainable systems that actually function. They're not going to be perfect, but they're going to be a hell of a lot more functional than what we have now. You know, it's important to bear in mind that they're less than 1% of the population. And from a certain perspective, that's terrifying for them. Provided that we ever decide to stop looking at our phones long enough to realize it. Well, that's all I got on this issue for today. As always, thanks for listening.